Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
I don't know what to say about that one. Before that rock bit at the end, I was just thinking someone's strangling that song. It just didn't sound great to me, and then it livened up. I've got to say, Nigel Ross Band, Steve Cox, from Man City fans and people who I really do want to get after. By the way, I've been looking forward to you two. I'll be totally honest with you. Lot to discuss.
Bring it on, Mortz.
I just want to know where you both are with the Man City situation as it stands currently.
Well, let's start with the fact that Manchester City have been very, very clear in saying that there is nothing to be answered. So they have said that there is nothing in these allegations. I think it's very clear that they will make sure that they get the best lawyers in the world, which I'm sure are all being lined up, to be able to deal with these allegations. And when we look at FFP anyway, the rules are there, let's be clear, to stop competition. It's been put in place to keep a handful of clubs at the top. And City have put money into football. They've developed the whole area. You've got to think they've developed. Money has gone in from the owner into his football club, and they have developed the whole of East Manchester, the employment of local people. You've got they've created an amazing academy. We've got an amazing setup, a women's team. And, you know, why is that a bad thing, is my question.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. May I just start? You have a podcast, and it's called...
It's called the Man City Show Podcast.
Thank you. I should have said that at the start. I ain't got it in my notes.
That's all right. We're the Man City Show Podcast, and Steve and I, I'm the host. Steve's a regular guest, and we come on here every week. And being serious, Mortz, you know, this is not new. You will remember.
Yes.
You've got as many grey hairs as I've got.
Do.
You will remember Blackburn Rovers and Jack Walker and putting money in there. Chelsea have put money into their club. Manchester City have done the same.
And can I ask a question?
You can ask anything you like.
We did this over the weekend as well, and when we talked about financial fair play, for me, it appears from what I've read that Man City have been caught doing something and they have not been honest about it. That's how it appeared, okay? But what you're saying is that that's not the case.
Well, Manchester City say it's not the case. I don't know. I mean, none of us are close enough to this. We read what was read in the paper. And it's very interesting. A lot of people have come out and said some very serious things about Manchester City. Let's just say for a moment, Manchester City get off. Let's just say that UEFA, who are not whiter than white, and that's maybe another show for another time. You know, is that using my words carefully, one could argue that UEFA themselves are a corrupt organisation.
Oh, let's be honest. We all know that. But the issue at the moment is around Man City. And I wanted to ask you, Steve, how do you view it? Because we had David Walker on at the weekend, and he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. But again, he would not say that Man City had done anything wrong. And all of what I've read, and I tried to read this lot, because I want to give a balanced view. All of what I read had alluded to the fact that there was something along the lines of, you know, that they had padded out the sponsorship aspect and things like that, and they'd misled UEFA. That's what I'd read.
Can I just say, before Steve comes in, just say one other thing. So what if the owner of his club sponsors a training ground and spends twice as much money as people think it's worth? What's wrong with that?
Is that against the rules?
Well, I don't know. Do we really know the rules?
Steve?
And that's the issue. Sorry, Steve.
I think it's... I mean, I kind of have to agree with Nigel in this. At the moment, we are getting the opinions off the back of what UEFA are actually saying. Man City are saying that they offered more information and more evidence that they hadn't done anything wrong. However, UEFA weren't prepared to accept it. So I'm wondering at this point in time, is it too early to make a judgment, given the fact that we've got one side of the story, UEFA.
Yeah.
They have a belief that City are guilty. We may find that the Court of Arbitration actually believe that City aren't guilty. UEFA, to a degree, may have even breached their own internal protocols in relation to examining this. This is all relating to incidents that they had initially given a verdict on back in 2014.
Yeah.
And they actually fined City for that. What they're saying now is the additional evidence that was uncovered by a hacker has actually suggested something that was further and more to it. Now, City have said that you perhaps only got half the story with that, and they've tried to produce additional evidence. Right. But UEFA aren't accepting it. So until everything comes out in the open, it's really hard to make a judgment as to whether... And if they are guilty, fine, I'll accept it. But at the moment, I don't think it's proven one way or the other.
There's a couple of things. I mean, just to give some context to it, UEFA launched an investigation after German newspaper Der Spiegel published leaked documents in November 8, 2018, alleging City had inflated the value of a sponsorship deal, misleading European football's governing body. Reports allege that City, who have always denied wrongdoing, deliberately misled UEFA so they could meet financial fair play rules requiring clubs to break even. City were fined $49 million in 2014 for a previous breach of regulations. So they have previous, is what I'm saying. Or is what I'm reading.
I think that's what you're reading, but apparently... It's more information appertaining to that original fine or that original situation that they're actually talking about now. Right. And the hacked emails appear to have given more credence to what UEFA's side of the story is. Now, we haven't heard City's side of that. They've obviously got a lot of evidence prepared. They've got lawyers working on it at the moment. And I'm sure when it goes to CAS, more will come out about it than we're currently getting.
I mean, one of the things that got me was that the legality of it all, because it all came from hacked stuff. There's things there that I'm not quite sure about.
And that's an important point, I think, as well, Mort, because the Court of Arbitration for Sport, CAS, CAS, whatever you want to call them, you know, they're not a court of law, but they will have a job of trying to unpick this. And I think potentially they will be looking more at the procedures, at the processes that have been gone through. And I think they will find that UEFA have not necessarily followed the right procedures and processes, in which case that, I think, will work in City's favour. I think City have a very strong argument. Listen, we're not experts, none of us, in this.
No,
we're
no.
just kind of you know, picking up bits and pieces ourselves and so on and so forth. And I heard David Walker on your show, and David's...
Yeah. It was brilliant. He ran it again this Sunday. He was that good.
He's a good friend, and he's a great friend of the show, and we've had him on here many, many times. And I think he talks a lot of sense. And many, many City fans will be supporting his view and have supported his view on his Red But Never Red blog, on Twitter. I think he's been a fantastic voice in this argument, and a guy we're going to get on shortly as well, similarly as well.
So you sit here and you believe that City have done nothing wrong.
That's what City are telling us.
Right.
And as a City fan,
what do you think? Because I can only go by what I've read, and I'm sitting there thinking Paris Saint-Germain have done it. In fact, I think what the financial fair play is doing is it's ring fencing the big clubs and leaving them there.
I said that at the start, Mort.
I don't like that. That I don't like.
Absolutely.
But in terms of what they've been, because from what I gather, and I can only talk about what I've read, in order to bring a case, they must have some sort of evidence.
Well, they may have. I mean, to answer your question directly, my view will be that City will absolutely rebuff these charges. I think they will find that UEFA are indeed a corrupt organisation, that they haven't stuck to the rules, that they've got this information illegally, they haven't stuck to their processes and procedures, and I feel very strongly and I feel very confidently, as the club does, that City will get off. And I think
completely.
That will be right. Completely. Absolutely. I feel very strongly about it.
So they'll appeal it and they reckon they'll get off completely?
Completely, because I think it will ruin UEFA if they don't, because City will take him to the cleaners.
Let me ask you this. Is this not because City have done something wrong, but because of the process that they've got the information is illegal?
I think it's a bit of both, in my view. Again, I'm surmising here. You're asking my view here.
Yeah,
Mort,
that's what I'm
which
asking.
Is all we can
that's
do.
All, that, exactly.
It's all we can do.
Well,
that's
you're educating me because, you know, you are closer to it. You know more than me. And it's a little bit more than what I've got on my screen in terms of information.
Of course, I understand that. I mean, Steve, do you have a similar view?
Or
I think you come from a slightly different position to me, maybe. I don't know.
Slightly different, but I guess... there's always, you can't say that there's no smoke without some kind of fire. So something has led UEFA to believe that. Whether they've actually followed the right process and procedure to actually come to their end result is questionable. It's interesting, and Colin Savage will kind of back us up a little with a little bit more detail about this later, but there's a lot to do with timing. Because that original hearing back in 2014 happened, UEFA, if they wanted to take further sanction against City, had to lodge it by a certain point in time. Now, as I understand it, that was the 1st of May last year. Believe it or not, they lodged it the day before, UEFA. Now, if that doesn't suggest that there's something slightly fishy going on somewhere, whatever that is, I don't know. It seems very coincidental.
What's their motive then? What's their agenda?
I think they're trying to. I think it looks as though UEFA are trying to send a message. It's almost as if the way it appears to me, UEFA think City have done something to mislead them. They want to punish City in some way, shape or form. The punishment at the moment looks somewhat excessive. 2 years ban, massive
fine.
Well,
it's the first, isn't it?
Yeah, but it looks as though that's almost been created to be so large that UEFA can be seen to knock that back to a year without being seen to be backing down too much, if you
that.
Get my drift.
Yeah,
so you
that.
Go to CAS say, it's very unfair, you've gone over the top, we'll knock it back down to a year again.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say that City don't take that further, because CAS is not the final stage in that process. They can go to higher courts, both in Switzerland and in Europe, if they wish to do so. And there's a chance that City might even push UEFA all the way. If they do, I'd say who's richer, City or UEFA?
You know what it sounds like? It really sounds like to me that City, UEFA have sort of stood on a landmine, and City are going, listen, okay, take your foot off it now, you're going to blow it to pieces. City are literally saying, go on then,
I think they
test
are.
Us.
And I think they are. And I think City, you know, all the statements right from the start, City feel very confident about their position. They've obviously done their research.
They seem calm.
They seem very calm. They seem very, very determined, which is why it gives me that confidence, Mort, you know, to make these statements to you. Because they have, as you say, been calm, considered, and they seem very determined to fight this one. And I suspect what they've got is they've got information, they've got proof, they can actually put some stuff in front of, I always forget what they call CAS, and to make sure that we put a good case forward.
See, I'm amazed at all of this, because, like I said, I watch a lot of telly. Maybe it's through that. When, you know, someone, you know, puts these allegations, you know, and charges someone, levies sanctions, all of that, they've got to be 100% certain in their information, haven't they? I'm just guessing, haven't they?
And sure, and I've said to you earlier as well that the number of journalists and people on Twitter, of course, very easy, isn't it, to make bold statements. If City get off this, a lot of people are going to come out of this with red faces, because they've said some terrible things. And if City are genuinely found not to be guilty, then I think it's going to have all sorts of repercussions on people.
Well, I mean, after the break, we're going to talk to an expert, Colin Savage, from City's Matters fans representative. Also, we're going to talk about the implications. If they do, if the ban is upheld, what happens? Do they lose players? Can they buy players? Will Pep stay? Will he go? All these and lots more will be discussed after the break. This is Love Sport, and this is the Man City Fan Show.
Love Sport.
We're back. It's the Man City Fan Show. Myself, Nigel Rosband, and Steve Cox. We're joined by Colin Savage from a City Matters fan representative. Now, Colin, good evening. What I want from you is a little bit of context. For those who probably are listening and don't know what we're talking about, Man City have been banned for 2 years and fined 25-35 million and whatever. But everyone I speak to, the two gentlemen in the room today and David Walker the other day, are adamant that City will get off. If you can give us a little bit of context on the whole thing.
I'll try, yeah. Obviously, these relates to the previous sanctions we had under financial fair play, which UEFA published in 2014, May 2014, in fact. Now, we signed a settlement with them, and we agreed to be monitored until 2016, so for the following two seasons. And they cleared us after that settlement. After that settlement period, we were free to go about our business unencumbered by any sanctions. Now, obviously, back in October, November 2018, Der Spiegel, based on hacked emails, published a series of articles which seemed to imply that City had misled UEFA. And UEFA eventually announced they were opening another investigation, which they did in March 2019, and they passed the case to their adjudicative chamber. So there's two chambers at the Club Financial Control Board. It's like the House of Commons, House of Lords. There's the investigative chamber, which is a bit like a magistrate's court, and there's the adjudicatory chamber, which is like the Crown Court. Now, apparently they passed their findings to the adjudicatory chamber. But one of the things was that there's something in the UEFA regulations that imposes a 5-year statute of limitations on reopening an old investigation. Now, it's very significant that, because the date that UEFA passed the file from the investigatory to the adjudicatory chamber was the 15th of May 2019. So it was one day before the 5 years expired. Well, it was the day the 5-year statute of limitations expired. So there's certainly a suggestion that this was rushed through and not thought out properly. But obviously that recommendation went to the adjudicatory chamber, I believe with a recommendation, because it was leaked, of a two-season ban from the Champions League. Now, in the meantime, City have appealed to the Court for Arbitration in Sport, which you can't normally do until you've been through the full UEFA process through both chambers. But they were appealing on the grounds that the referral to the adjudicatory chamber was flawed because of all the leaks, mainly from UEFA, and that had prejudiced their case. Now, the Court for Arbitration in Sport didn't accept City's claim. They said they've got to wait until the adjudicatory chamber handed down its final decision, but they did aim some barbs at UEFA over the leaks. So this is what happened on Friday evening. The adjudicatory chamber finally announced its decision to confirm the two-season ban from the Champions League and a £30 million fine, or something, €30 million fine.
Okay. I spoke to David Walker at the weekend, and everything that I've read has told me that they've done something wrong, that their fingers have been caught in a cookie jar, that they've made a mistake, but no one seems to be able to admit that they've done something wrong. Have they?
Well, what the Der Spiegel articles seem to indicate was that So, for example, say Etihad had been paying City $50 million a year for the sponsorship, which covers the name on the shirt, the stadium naming, and the naming of the adjacent campus. What Der Spiegel emails seem to suggest was that Etihad weren't paying all that $50 million, and the other, let's say $42 million, was coming from somewhere else.
Right.
Now, the implication was that was being funded out of Sheikh Mansour's own pocket.
Right.
Now, there's rules about owner. It's not necessarily an issue of that. I don't want to go into the complexity of the regulations. It's not necessarily an issue. But UEFA seem to have seen it as what they call disguised owner investment. Owners can invest in the clubs, but in a couple of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And UEFA, actually, they contradict themselves a lot. I won't go into the detail. We haven't got all night. But UEFA contradicted themselves in what they said back in 2014 and what they're saying now. So their position is completely reversed. Now, say, it's not necessarily a problem that Sheikh Mansour has put money in, but there's evidence, and I've seen this evidence, that in fact Etihad sponsorship, and probably there's two or three other sponsorships, are actually funded by the Executive Council of Abu Dhabi, so that's the ruling body. There's a document in circulation in relation to defence of an action by US Airlines against Etihad, Emirates and Qatar Airways, where this states that the Etihad sponsorship is covered by Abu Dhabi themselves, not Sheikh Mansour as an individual owner. So that throws a completely different light on it. People may still say, that's cheating. You know, if Etihad went out and borrowed the money or whatever, it wouldn't matter. Where, as long as Etihad paid that $50 million, and as long as it's not from Sheikh Mansour, then in theory, that's okay under the rules of financial fair play. So there's this argument of, have City done anything wrong? And City say they haven't, UEFA say they have.
I mean, City have been pretty determined and pretty single-minded in all the statements, and as Mort said earlier, pretty calm as well about the whole thing as well, Colin. I'm interested to know that what powers do the Court of Arbitration for Sport have, CAS, CAS? So when it goes to them, what can they do, what can't they do? And what are the kind of likely next steps once that's gone to them?
I'm not a legal expert, but the great thing about being a City fan is you soon become a financial expert, a legal expert, an expert on Middle East politics and all sorts of stuff. So I'm not really a legal expert, I'm not a lawyer. But Court for Arbitration in Sport, it's not a court in that sense. There are three arbitrators. So Manchester City pick one out of a predefined list, UEFA pick one, and the court themselves pick one. Now, basically, they're not looking to judge whether City have fiddled the books or not. They're not looking to judge the legality or otherwise of financial fair play. All they're looking at, as I understand it, is did UEFA follow its published rules and procedures? Has it followed precedent in applying the punishment to Manchester City? So it's all about process and procedure. So this is where City's complaint about the leaks will come in. It's where City will probably challenge the fact that UEFA was over its statute of limitations because it took the most optimistic view of that kind of cut-off date that it possibly could. City will probably argue that they had a settlement agreement signed in 2014, and that settlement agreement and the subsequent release from it meant UEFA couldn't open the case. So there's all these procedural-type arguments, nothing big about financial fair play. Now CAS can do, and it's not just a football court, it rules on drug cases in sport, all sorts of complex commercial cases. So it's binding, so it can say to UEFA, your case was fundamentally flawed and it's thrown out. So that means City walk away without a ban. It can say to UEFA, we think you've got a case, but to be honest, there are flaws in it, and we think the punishment is too severe for the crime, so go away and come back with a lesser punishment. And I don't think they can say, oh, well, it's only a fine, or it should only be a fine, or it should only be a year's ban. I think they can suggest that the level of punishment was too high, but not suggest what the punishment, revised punishment, ought to be.
So Colin, if they, sorry to jump in there, but if City are not happy with CAS, as in the answer that we get from CAS, there have got to be some steps further on from that. Do you think City will take it to a higher court within Switzerland? If, say, for example, UEFA say, we still think you're somewhat culpable, but because of the way CAS have actually ruled back on it, we're going to cut your fine and we're going to cut your suspension to 1 year from the competition. City is still not happy with that. What happens next? What's our next step after that?
I believe there's an appeal to a Swiss court, but I'm told the chances of succeeding there are relatively small. They tend to be very good on these things, I'm told. So they go into things very thoroughly. They've got three real experts on the panel. There's no jury. No one should be playing to the gallery. They'll take the evidence. They'll spend a long time looking at it. So it's very, very rare. I think it's only happened once that someone's appealed above CAS and basically they found against the Court for Arbitration in Sport finding. But there are other routes. So, as I said, CAS is only procedural, very technical. There are other levels to this. So City could fight the whole concept of financial fair play. And actually, there's a case still in theory in progress being run by a Belgian lawyer called Jean-Louis Dupont. And that's kind of stalled at the moment because no one could decide which court should hear it. But probably the Swiss court. Now, City could take their case on financial fair play to the Swiss court as a genuine legal dispute. So that's potentially the next step, yeah.
Okay, or potentially even the European Court of Human Rights as well was the other one that's been sort of vocalised as being a potential end court for this.
I don't think we can't talk about the European Court for Human Rights these days, can we, since Brexit?
No.
One last question from me, I guess. What do you think, and we're all speculating here, we've said that throughout the whole show here, Colin, what do you think in your heart of hearts? You're not a lawyer, you're just a City fan. What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, as you'll say to people, both sides say they're right. And there's an old Jewish joke about that, but I won't go into that now. I think, and I've listened to a lawyer, a commercial lawyer on this, I think there are sufficient flaws in UEFA's case. There is sufficient precedent with stuff they've done for PSG, for example. But when you go into court, you never quite know what will happen. You can go into a court thinking you've got, look at O.J. Simpson. You can virtually catch someone with a smoking gun in their hand and a dead body. But if you get the technicalities wrong, the case can be thrown out. So you never quite know. But I think there were sufficient flaws in UEFA's case to justify City appealing to CAS. Yes.
Well, I tell you what, we have so much more to talk about, and we're going to talk about a little bit more after the break. We're going to discuss the implications if the sanctions are upheld in court. We're going to discuss the time frame. How long is this going to take? What impact could it have on the Champions League early stages next season? All this and a lot more on the Man City Fan Show after the break on Love Sport Radio. See you in a sec.
Love Sport.
Now, what's giving me the ump is this hour is going a little bit too fast for my liking. I've got to say, I've got Nigel and Steve and Colin. I've got to ask, gentlemen, all three of you, you tell me the time frame. How long could this take? Is it going to rumble on and on? And what the implications if it does rumble on and on?
I think everybody's got a responsibility to get this sorted very, very quickly, because I think we all recognise the implications of this still hanging on into next season, starting the Premier League, not knowing what the position might be for a team like Manchester City, who I think have got the longest record for the most number of consecutive seasons in the Premier League at the moment, who are likely to sort of stake a claim again, I think would be really wrong. So I get the impression this is going to be handled very quickly, and we'll have a situation and a results pretty sharpish to enable us to crack on with the season with full knowledge of what the implications are for everybody.
But Steve, if it doesn't, because Man City are adamant and they will fight it and fight it and fight, if that happens, then, and it carries on and on and on, what's going to happen in the qualifying rounds for the Champions League? All those things come into it.
Well, you could potentially see a legal challenge or an injunction that might actually stop UEFA from starting the Champions League next season, which doesn't work in anybody's interest. I'm not sure that we'll necessarily get to that position, but the other side of it is if the case against City is not proven before the start of the Champions League, how can you exclude them from it?
If you
did exclude them from it and then they were found to be clear of the charges, then potentially they'll be lodging a complaint against you and suing you for millions of pounds of lost revenue, and lost earnings and reputation.
And they reckon it, they reckon something like 100 million is kind of the kind of likely revenue.
So it's serious money.
It's a huge amount of money.
And Colin, as much as you know what we've discussed, and I'd love your opinion on it, the Premier League have sort of stuck their oar in also on the financial fair play. You know, they're talking about, I read at the weekend that the 2014 Premier League title might be up for grabs, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, how do you view all of that?
I tend to take that with a bit of a pinch of salt, to be honest. The Premier League does have some powers, and it's Premier League rules, to take action against clubs that have apparently given misleading or false or misleading statements in their attempt to gain a UEFA club licence. But we were under the, under the kind of close eye of UEFA up to 2016. So I'm not sure where that takes us. And the Premier League, I think, as I was saying this to Nigel before, that I think there'll be, the Premier League isn't really an organisation, it's a collection of clubs. So like any collection like that, they want an easy life. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to go out on a limb. So very much, the Premier League may be keeping a close eye on this, but they certainly won't take any precipitate action before the outcome of the CAS appeal is clear, I'm sure.
Let's take the view that potentially, let's just say potentially, that a ban comes in, and taking Steve's view that probably they did 2 years to enable them to kind of reduce it to 1 year, and let's assume that's come in place. What do you think, Colin, is going to be the impact on City then recruiting players? Because the top players around the world want to play in the top European competition. Do you think that will have an impact on City actually recruiting top talent going forward if they've been banned for, say, a year from the Champions League?
Well, it might, but the answer I always give to that is we recruited players like David Silva, Yaya Toure, Carlos Tevez, when we weren't the power we are now. So, if it's just a year and we know we're going to get back in the league, then back in the Champions League, then no, I don't think it'll have a significant impact on recruitment, to be honest.
Well, let me ask. I mean, I was reading at the weekend also, there was a sports lawyer who came along and said that, you know, if they were found guilty, then it's a breach of the players' contracts. They become free transfers. Now, it's not so much about recruiting. It's about keeping your players too, because if there's a two-year ban, these players want to play in the Premier tournaments. Keeping your players, keeping your manager. I mean, there's a whole heap of players. You know, I read that Real Madrid are sniffing around some of your players, which is going to happen. Are you going to be able to keep them all?
If I go first, Colin, on this one, I think it's interesting. We discussed this on the podcast on the Man City show earlier on, and I think there's a school of opinion that said actually players at this level earn a huge amount of money, and actually, you know, playing for a club like Manchester City, playing for a manager like Pep Guardiola, with the environment they have, with the facilities that they have, actually playing in the Champions League isn't the be all and end all. And as far as they're concerned, I was saying playing in the Champions League is not necessarily the be all end all. They're earning huge amounts
really?
Of money. Yeah. That there is.
I've got to say I disagree with that. Sure. I think you see when you get to the stage that they're at, it's now not even about money. It's just about winning stuff because you're getting paid so much money, and whatever club they go to, they're going to get that money. It becomes about winning stuff.
But Mort, just let's remind ourselves, whatever nonsenses we're going on about here in terms of FFP, they're playing for a club that won all four domestic trophies last year. Mm. They won the Community Shield. They won the FA Cup. They won the League Cup.
What's the one they haven't won?
And they won the Premier League.
That's the one they haven't won?
Well, we know that.
But that's the one that the players... When you bring foreign players into the country, and I'm sure you'll all agree, they go to the top clubs because of Champions League football. That's why they go. It's not about winning the Premier League, although they'd love to do that. They want to win the Champions League. They want to go to that club and bring that trophy back home. And it's about playing in that, is my experience of the top players.
Colin, you got a view?
I don't know. As I said before, you know, we recruited players before we were in the Champions League. We recruited top-class quality players. Yeah, I agree the top players, the world's top players, will want to play in the Champions League. But, you know, Liverpool won it last season. Chelsea won it 2012. Before that, Manchester United 2008. Liverpool 2005, in 15 years, only four English clubs have won it. Your chances, you know, playing in it and winning it are perhaps two different things. So I agree with, I don't know if it's Nigel or Steve said it, that you know, playing for a club that won every trophy, domestic trophy possible, is, I would imagine, to a player, I'm not a player, a great attraction.
I'm actually more in Mort's camp on this one. I'm going to end up disagreeing with two City fans, which is not the often that I do that. I mean, I can understand with a one-year ban, I can imagine that most people will probably say, do you know what, I'll stay for that because there's a chance of getting in the year after it. The problem you've got, if it is actually upheld as a two-year ban, you've got no chance. And when we recruited the likes of Tevez, Yaya Toure, Silva, we had a chance of playing in the Champions League. It was built, it was a means to an end, it was a project, it was something that they brought them in. That, you know, They came on, they knew that there was an end goal. It was to get in the Champions League, it was to actually even try and win the damn thing. If you've got no chance for 2 years and you're someone like Kevin De Bruyne, who's early 30s, he's looking towards it and thinking, do you know what, by the time I'm 32, do I really want to wait till I'm 32 to try and start winning the Champions League again? Is that the right thing to do? Do I move on to somewhere else where they're going to pay me the same amount of money but still have the chance of it? You could even argue that with Real Madrid being part of UEFA, which they are because it's a conglomerate, they might have even announced this at this point in time to completely unsettle us in relation to that and start being able to sniff around players. There's an argument that you could say it's divisive along those lines. That may even come out of the CAS thing as well. You know, City might use that as an argument. But if I was a player and I was coming towards the mid of my career and the prime of my career, I'd want to be winning something.
So what about the point that Mort's made earlier on about Pep himself? Let's just touch on that as well if we can. Clearly, we've had situation with Liverpool being 137 points ahead or whatever they are. And you know, the bus route's already planned and the livery's already on their bus ready to go. And actually, there's talk now of Pep. Maybe we know he's got another year on his contract, could go if he wins the Champions League. He doesn't win the Champions League. Does this speed up, potentially, his departure from Manchester City, in your view, Steve?
It could do, but I was talking to him last week, and he did say he was looking forward to seeing me at Fleetwood Town on a Thursday night in the rain. And I said, that's fine, as long as you can bring it and prove it, I'll be glad to see you there.
Colin, all of these, you know, implications are hypothetical at the moment. They are. There's no dispute in that. But one of the things that also gets to me is if the ban is upheld, between now and the end of the season, apart from the FA Cup and the League Cup, they've got nothing to play for in terms of the Premier League. Because even finishing second gives them nothing. Does that make sense? I mean, I wonder how they'll view, what the mentality will be like.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we've still got the FA Cup. Obviously, we've still got the League Cup to come in out in 2 or 3 weeks. We've still got the FA Cup. But yeah, I mean, that would be quite dispiriting, I guess. I wouldn't argue with that.
I tell you what I'd like, though. Wouldn't it be brilliant if, I mean, not if the ban's upheld, but if it was, and then Man City go and win the Champions League. I mean, I think the Real Madrid game now is huge. It really does have huge implications now.
Again, there is a school of thought, not that I would agree with it. I mean, obviously, just before I say that, the anthem's going to be interesting, isn't it? I mean, we've been booing that.
We've been doing it anyway.
I mean, how loud is that boo going to be? Yeah? I mean, again, there's different thoughts. You know, do we boo it? Do we just ignore it? Do we turn around and do the Poznan? You know what? Do we sing Blue Moon? So loads of things. And I forgot what I was going to say now as well. But
can I ask? I mean, listen, I'm not a City fan, but I've read bits and pieces. Why do they boo the anthem? Why don't they like it? Is it just because of this?
It's all the financial fair play. It's just built over time. It's built up and built up and built up. And UEFA have never really done anything to try and build any bridges.
Yeah.
And I think the City fans just feel as though UEFA is flipping them the bird all the time. That, you know, they're just saying, we are in charge. We will do what you can't do it. You can't join our club. You haven't, you know, we're going to do you for financial fair play. We're going to ban you. We're going to. That's how the City fans feel. And it's,
Colin, I was saying.
The catalyst for that was when CSK Moscow had a ban put on home fans because of racist chants. City and Bayern Munich fans both had booked tickets to that, or booked travel and transport to that game, which is not cheap. And they got turned away from the game, despite the fact they weren't under any sanction, and weren't recompensed. So that the next game, actually, was City and Bayern. And that's when the booing actually started, and why.
Oh, fair play, and so they should have booed, and they should really carry on booing. I think that's absolutely disgraceful. But I mean, I look at this, and we were talking a little bit earlier that maybe this is a fight that UEFA shouldn't be involved in. Maybe it's not one. Maybe it's one that's going to hurt them more than help them. Because I think it sounds. Listen to the gents here. That Man City could expose a soft underbelly of corruption in UEFA.
Well, that's true. And I think, I've said before, there are two UEFAs. I talked about the Premier League before. There's the bureaucracy that's UEFA, that's headed by Alexander Seferin, the president. And then there's the clubs who make it up, the members of the UEFA. And I think there's a battle going on between them. And I think Alexander Seferin, I'm told by senior people at City, was desperately trying to organise a deal whereby City pleaded guilty to what he called a technical breach, accepted a fine, and the case would be closed. Now, City just told him no, because City have had assurances from UEFA before. stuff. We had a settlement agreement that they've reopened, but there were other things that have gone on in the past. So City aren't in any mood to compromise. And I think while the Bayern Munichs and the Real Madrids and the other clubs of the old G14 cartel might be quite happy to take the battle, he doesn't want the battle. He wants a quiet life. He wants the money to come rolling in for the Champions League. He doesn't want clubs threatening breakaways and all that sort of stuff. He's got to steer. I do feel sorry for him because he's got to steer a very difficult course.
Colin, thank you very much. I mean, I think this is going to run and run and run. Not too long. I hope they come to a conclusion fairly quickly. That's Colin Savage from a City Matters fan. He's a fan representative. Now, after the break, we're going to be talking about the Man City West Ham game. We're going to be talking about football. Thank you. Not all these issues that surround it. We'll see you in a minute. This is a Man City fan show. And this is Love Sport Radio. See you in a sec.
Love Sport. Sport.
Well, that told me it's the opposition view. This is the Man City fan show. We've got 12 minutes left. This has flown by. I think Wednesday, your lot are at home to West Ham. Do you lot go to the games?
Yeah, yes. home and away. Home, yeah, and season card holder. Yeah, I know. What can you do? Yeah. You change your wife, you change your car, you don't change your football team. You know that, Mort.
You can't. So I hope your wife is listening. You're not going to get it big time, mate. I'm telling you. No dinner for you when you get home.
I do the dinner anyway. What are you talking about? I do her dinner.
I've got to ask, after everything that's gone on, sometimes what this creates is somewhat of a siege mentality, and the team come out flying to prove a point. I'm worried about West Ham.
I think West Ham are going to get battered on Wednesday for all the reasons you say. I mean, they have got, and we'll come on to this shortly, but they have got the most horrendous run in. Their confidence is rock bottom. City will be wanting to go with, they want to have a massive win under their belt before they meet Real Madrid. Obviously, we've got Leicester at the weekend as well before that game.
Yeah.
But they are going to, in my view, we are due one of those 5, 6, or 7.
6-1. 6-1.
It's one of those, in my view. I think they will be so fired up.
You reckon?
I think so. And
De Bruyne angry, do you? You don't want to make De Bruyne angry.
West Ham are in trouble.
Definitely.
Okay.
Absolutely, well, definitely.
Hayden Smith-Shepherd, who's a West Ham journalist. Are you listening to this, Hayden? Apparently, your lot are going to get battered.
Yeah. Listen, I don't think we'll get battered, but I think we'll lose comfortably. I don't see it being a 6-0. I think you've got to remember the West Ham have underachieved so badly this year. I mean, there are players with pride there, and I think after the run we've been going through, they'll be wanting to make a point just as much as City are wanting to make a point. So I don't see it being 6 or 7, but maybe 3-0. So still relatively comfortable for City, but I don't see it being a landslide, in my opinion.
I really feel for you, Hayden. I'll be honest with you, this year you've had a real bum of a season, to be fair. And, I'm not trying to put the boot in. It's kind of... I kind of like West Ham a bit. They're one of those clubs that we actually quite like playing because the fans are always pretty good. They're always a generous and welcoming bunch whenever we've gone to see you at the old Berlin ground and places like that. You know, I spent a bit of time there, and I really feel for West Ham. It's not, it seems to be like a club that's really much in transition, but you've not got a lot of leadership at the top with Brady and the Sullivan and Gold sort of ethic there. They don't really seem to be doing much for you at the moment.
Their vision hasn't exactly gone to plan, or whatever that plan really was. I think their plan was just get into the stadium, wait for the government to give it to them for free because they knew it would make losses and sell the club eventually. That's just my honest opinion.
No atmosphere, though, is there? I used to love going to the Berlin ground because there was a bit of atmosphere there. It kind of felt like seeing the flats over the other side of the pit. You know, when you're sat there in your seat looking at the flats over the other side and people watching and leaning out of windows and that. And I don't think you get that where you are
you
now.
You can't. The problem that you have also is, having played at Upton Park, is the fans are literally sitting on your shoulders. And you've gone from the fans sitting on your shoulders to... Really and truly, the seats should have, you know, you put your hand under the seat, they should have binoculars there, because you need, I've done commentary at the London Stadium, and you are so far away from the action. I wonder, that must be difficult for you, Hayden, to be able to deal with, because you're nowhere near the players.
No, it's awful. And I sit literally just next to the dugout, one row behind the disabled row, and it still feels a mile away. And it's, one thing I would say is when we're on top in a game, which has been incredibly rare this year. Probably had a handful of games where we've really performed. Norwich is probably the only game I think at the very beginning of the year that I can think we actually played well. But the fans did generate an atmosphere. There was an odd stomp going around, which I've noticed, which I don't know how I feel about. It's just you can't compare the atmosphere from the bowling to this. It's just so drastically different, and the atmosphere will never be the same, even though that they're bringing, I think, both ends where the goal is, they're bringing seats a little bit closer for the next campaign. How close, I don't know. But yeah, they're trying to square it off, I believe.
I did read that you're going to sort of be putting some more seats. I have to say, and I'm putting the boot in, I think it's the worst ground to watch football. I've been to every game that City have played there since you've moved, and it's not a place to watch football. It's an athletic stadium that we play football in, but we know that. Moving on to West Ham and your season, just want to touch on your manager. We've done the board. What about your manager? Obviously, somebody who used to manage a team from just outside Manchester, of course, who play in red.
You're not going to let that go, are you?
No, never. You know that, Morts. Welcome to my world, Morts. So your thoughts on Mr. Moyes and the winner who is David Moyes? Are you happy with him?
Well, that's just another bit of press disaster that just keeps rolling out of West Ham. But, I mean, I don't have anything personally against David Moyes, but I think he sets up far too defensive in games which we shouldn't be defensive. We'll probably have 10 defenders playing tomorrow. But, I mean, it's one win in 10, I think, at this point, in hindsight, I probably would have rather have kept Pellegrini, you know.
Yeah.
But we have what we have. I think he was a cheap appointment. I was reading somewhere that the board didn't want to pay $8 million to get Sean Dyche in. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But apparently he expressed an interest, so. I just think there was an array of options that would have been far better than David Moyes. I mean, if you're Felipe Anderson and you're rocking up to training and you signed with Pellegrini, and now you've got David Moyes there trying to gee you up for Manchester City. I don't see the motivation for players to want to perform for him as much, and that's no discredit to him.
And when you look at your run of games as well, I mean, it's not just City, but you have got one hell of a run of games. I must just tell you quickly, a very good friend of mine, David, who listens to the show, has come up with a new phrase for West Ham fans. And it's very simple. It's a very simple, catchy statement, which is, get relegation done. He thinks that's what West Ham should do. Give all the other teams the points now. Save all the hassle. Save all the tears. Get yourself set up for the Championship next season. Is that fair, Hayden? Or do you think actually you've got something enough there? You've got enough quality to stay up? What's your honest view?
I think it goes down to the last four games. That's the way I see it. The last four or five games. I might be a bit of a blind optimist, but I actually think we have enough to stay up. And I actually will be very intrigued to see how Jared Bowen plays fast. He could, if he hits the ground running, he could be the difference for us staying up or going down, in my honest opinion. But that's a lot to pin on someone who's just coming up from the Championship midway through a season. So I think there's a lot of ifs and buts and maybes. But I think Bournemouth, Villa, maybe Watford might be worse than us. It's very debatable because we are atrocious at the moment, but fingers crossed that we have just enough. But it'll be under the stewardship of our owners, it will only repeat itself next year, I fear, unfortunately.
Hayden, I'll tell you what, you sound so sad. It's the downer. I mean, listen, thank you for your time anyway. And I fingers crossed, I think you know, the Premier League needs a strong West Ham in it. I really do.
Yeah.
Especially as it's a London team. I want as many London teams in it as possible. Thank you very much, Hayden Smith-Shepherd, who's a West Ham journalist. I felt sad for him then. I didn't want to stick the boot in and say that they're definitely going to go down or that they're going to get battered on Wednesday.
Doesn't sound a happy boy, does he?
He really doesn't. No. Very briefly, gentlemen, all this situation with Man City, how do you honestly believe it's going to end? I know you asked Colin that. I'm going to ask both of you that to finish.
Well, I genuinely think that City feel very confident about this. I think we have the best lawyers on the planet. And I do think UEFA have got their own issues. And I think the result of all of that will be City actually will get off. Never mind a one-year ban, never mind a two-year ban.
They're getting off.
I think City getting
so
off.
So we've got one optimist and Steve?
I think Cass will sort of reduce the ban. I think Cass will give UEFA a slap on the wrist. I don't think they'll go the full sanction of removing it completely. And I think City will then continue to pursue them through the courts until they clear the name.
I, for one, am looking forward to it. And Nigel and Steve, thank you very much. It's been absolutely educational today. Honestly, I'm sitting in the corner here taking notes so that I can go back and talk to my mates about it. Thank you very much. That's the end of the Man City fan show. We'll be back in a sec.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.